This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Kalamazoo County Commissioner Brant Iden hopes to represent the city of Portage and the surrounding area in the State House next year. Iden is running for the Republican nomination in the 61st District. The current representative, Republican Margaret O'Brien, is running for State Senate. Brant Iden, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me. It's always great to be on the show. I appreciate it. Big fan of radio. I love coming in, so thanks for having me.
And we're also joined by Kalamazoo Gazette reporter Alex Mitchell.
Thanks for having me, Gordon.
Brant Iden, begin by telling a little bit more about yourself and what you would like to do with at least 2 years in the State House if you get them.
Sure. Well, I'll tell you a little bit about my background. So grew up in Battle Creek, Southwest Michigan guy, attended school at Kalamazoo College, and stayed in the community ever since. I love Kalamazoo, and I'm it's great to be here. And we have so many great things going for this community that I got involved in the community, and after I graduated, and just ended up sticking around and staying, which is fantastic. I own a small business here in Kalamazoo called Identity Management and Consulting, and we're a real estate management firm and turnaround consultant, and kind of the, you know, there's some intricacies in that, but we do a lot of turnaround work. So we take companies that are struggling financially, and whether they've had some run-ins with perhaps their lender and they can't seem to figure a way out, the lender has an option of appointing a financial manager through the state circuit court to come in and kind of try to right the ship a little bit. And so that's what our company does. So my background is heavy in finance, and I spend a lot of time working with small businesses throughout the state. Actually, I shouldn't just say small, all sorts of companies from manufacturing facilities on the east side of the state all the way to gas stations and laundromats. We've done all sorts of different types of assets. So obviously a small business background, and that's one of the things I'm going to segue a little bit into your question. That's one of the main reasons that I'm running. You know, job growth in the economy is something that's near and dear to my heart. I know Alex knows this, but I, of course, serve on the board at Junior Achievement, and, you know, financial literacy has always been important to me, and cultivating our young people to teach them to be entrepreneurs and grow our economy and stay here and grow Kalamazoo's economy is something that I'm interested in. So looking forward to my House run, and one of the things that I'm certainly running on is job growth, and that's going to be my primary focus, hopefully my 2 years in office.
Alex Mitchell, first question for Brant Iden.
Brant, I think the issue on everyone's mind this time of year is road funding and finding additional, you know, funding for our crumbling roads. What means would you support for fixing the roads?
That's a great question, and one that I'm excited actually to explore. You know, the legislature wasn't able to get anything accomplished just because of all the different competing ideas that have been brought into play on this, and so I'm excited about being able to tackle that this time around, or hopefully this next legislative cycle around. I believe it's a multifaceted approach. It can't be, it's not a silver bullet or one size fits all theory. I know that some candidates have articulated this theory or that theory, or I'd pull the money from here or I'd pull the money from there. I don't believe that that's going to be an effective way of solving the problem. We have to look at this from a number of different angles. For example, we have to look first and foremost from within the budget. Where can we find money from within the current existing budget to be able to make up for roughly what I'm looking at is going to be a $1.2 billion figure that the governor and the legislature have thrown out. And I think we can do that. There are, in my opinion, a lot of cost savings to be had from prevailing wage. I'm thinking that based on Anderson Economic Group and the 2013 Republican Action Plan states that $250 million a year could potentially come back to the state if we repeal prevailing wage.
Can you explain what prevailing wage is for people who don't follow this closely?
Yeah, absolutely. Prevailing wage is basically the state mandates that a certain wage be paid for work that is contracted by the state. And so I've looked at a number of different figures, and those rates and ranges vary from, and you can get on the state's website, LARA, their LARA website, and you can look at the numbers that we pay for prevailing wage. And they range in Kalamazoo County for an iron worker, for example, of somewhere between $30.16 to Oakland County, which is $60.41 per hour. Prevailing wage, for example, an iron worker, is just a random example that I pulled. So when the state contracts for work like road construction, schools, etc., they have to pay a prevailing wage. If we repeal that, again, these numbers that I looked at came from last year, but $250 million a year potentially could be saved by the repeal of prevailing wage. Is that a step in the right direction for the $1.2 billion that we need? I absolutely think so. Now, that's not the only thing that's going to be able to get it done. We have to look at some other avenues as well. And so we probably have to look at where can there be some cost savings with some of our other expenses as well. And then, you know, we probably have to bring in some of our business groups and say, okay, you know, what other avenues can we look at? Right now, the Republicans are looking at a wholesale tax. I think that that's part of it. So it's not going to be one particular item, you know, one particular space in the budget where somebody says, oh, I can go find $1.2 billion there, or I can go raise a tax here and get $1.2 billion. It's not going to happen. We need to look at this from a multifaceted level, take a look at five or six different things and say, okay, this adds up, 20 bucks here, 20 bucks there. It's just like a home budget. When you're looking at it, say, how do I save the money for that car, for example? Well, I'm going to pull from this, I'm going to pull from that, and five or six different ways are going to get us to what we need to do to fully fund roads. And we know that this is a priority. And because everybody I talk to, when I'm out there knocking on doors, they say, hey, we need better roads. We understand the importance of Michigan's infrastructure, but I don't want to pay anything more for it. Okay. And I've gotten the message loud and clear. So that means that I've got to go and take a hard look at some of the other areas where we can find these dollars.
So does that mean that you are not willing to consider something like an increase in vehicle registration fees? Because you say people don't want to pay more.
People don't want to pay more. And I think that it's going to take a number of different approaches to solving the problem. Do we have to potentially look at the wholesale tax, or do we have to potentially look at registration fees? I think that is going to be potentially part of the solution to the problem, but it's not going to be a one issue. Would I be willing to take a look at it and consider it? Yes, but only if it involves additional reforms first and finding savings within the budget first.
You are willing then to acknowledge that new revenues
Could be needed.
You're not saying they absolutely are.
Absolutely not.
And would you be open to exploring the possibility of toll roads at all?
You know, toll roads, I've talked to a number of constituents about toll roads in particular, and I don't think that toll roads at this point in time are the solution to the problem. I think that we can find other ways to do it before we address toll roads. And so at this point in time, you know, I never like to talk in absolutes. I don't think it's appropriate for politics, because we need to bring lots of different groups in and have lots of different conversations about different avenues to explore. But at this point in time, toll roads would not be number one on my agenda.
There's a proposal on the August ballot which phases out the personal property tax. Would you support it?
Absolutely. I am very supportive of Proposal 1. Proposal 1, I want to say that I hope citizens get out and support Proposal 1, because this is going to reform an antiquated personal property tax that impacts local businesses detrimentally. Okay, so what Proposal 1 is going to do is fully fund the 100% of our local services. So it's going to repeal the personal property tax, and it's going to help small businesses and manufacturers, and we're going to be able to fully fund local services like police, fire, schools, jails, etc. And so if we don't do this, and if we don't support Proposal 1, what's going to happen is the legislature is going to have to go back to the drawing board and start all over again. This is the best that I've seen so far of the ways to address repealing personal property tax, because we know that when Michigan is trying to compete with Indiana, Ohio, Wisconsin, Illinois that don't have a personal property tax, manufacturers and small businesses look at that and they say, okay, you know, I'm going to have to invest so many dollars upfront for equipment, pay a sales tax on those, and then I'm going to have to pay every year for the privilege of owning that equipment. It's an antiquated tax that we have to get rid of. And so if this is the means to solve that problem and at the same time not impact being a local government guy, not impact local government, then I'm very supportive of it. And I hope citizens will be as well.
And you're confident local governments are going to be held harmless by the formula that's been set up?
I've had at-length conversations with the Lieutenant Governor and Representative O'Brien on this particular issue, and I believe so. Basically, this it's no new tax. This is going to be funded through the use tax revenue. And remember, the use tax revenue was created in 1937 by the state legislature. It constitutionally cannot go above 6%, which is where it's currently at, and it's going to be on telecoms, lodging, and then basically online purchases. It was originally set up for catalog purchases, but now our economy has shifted and it'll be online purchases. So this is, in my opinion, not only do I think it will be 100%, but I think this is the only area in the state of Michigan where tax revenue growth, we're going to see that go up in the future, because online purchases are the way our economy is going. And so I believe that as that continues to climb, more people continue to purchase online, what's going to happen is that tax could eventually, you know, the amount of it's never going to go up, but the amount that we're able to obtain is going to increase. So if the state's willing to give up their use tax, which is the only growing tax revenue base they have, and give it back to local governments, I support that 100%.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with Republican State House candidate Brant Iden. He's running in the 61st District, which includes the city of Portage. He's a current member of the Kalamazoo County Board of Commissioners. Kalamazoo Gazette reporter Alex Mitchell is here as well. Alex.
Brant, Governor Snyder has indicated he may veto a proposal to ban e-cigarette sales to minors that recently passed the House and Senate and is sitting on his desk. He's indicated the legislation would classify the product or would not classify the products as tobacco products, and that he has concerns that that could lead to lax regulations down the line. He has indicated he may be in favor of alternative proposals that would classify these as tobacco products. Would you be in favor of the legislation that's currently sitting on his desk?
I have not reviewed the legislation that you just brought up, so I'd have to take a look at it first before I could give you a specific answer on that. But let me tell you, when I've talked to a number of our school districts, this is a big concern within our schools right now. I've talked to our superintendents, our principals, our teachers, and I was shocked to hear that when I was talking to them, this was actually the number one issue they brought up. These e-cigarettes and these electronic cigarettes are huge in the classroom right now. And so our schools are looking for some legislation. They're looking for some support from the legislature to be able to classify these, what classification they're going to fall under. Probably tobacco would be my guess. That makes the most logical sense. And if this is something that the teachers believe that is impacting their abilities to teach in the classroom because of, you know, kids taking, and they didn't give me a lot of specifics, so I don't know if that means kids taking cigarette breaks, or I'm not certain what that means, but they're saying, hey, look, this impacts our ability to teach our students. And so if it is a detraction in the classroom from educators being able to educate, then yeah, I mean, I could see myself certainly supporting that if this would strengthen some requirements and give our teachers some ability to make sure that their classroom functions well, I should say.
Would you favor any decriminalization of marijuana or full-blown legalization in Michigan?
Well, you know, that's a very good question. And I think one that we've seen kind of play out in Colorado, certainly.
And Washington.
And Washington. Thank you. Well, first and foremost, let me say, as a local government guy in Kalamazoo County, I need to put a plug in for Kalamazoo County. Our drug courts are by far the, in my opinion, the best drug court in the state. Now, Oakland County might disagree with me a little bit because they also have a great drug court. But, you know, our drug court is mainly privately funded, and they do a great job of taking these low-level users and keeping them out of jail. And we all know, and statistics have shown time and time again, that not only does this save the county money and does it save local governments money, but it also helps to, you know, we can't save all of them, but repeat offenders, we're seeing that on the decrease as well with some of these sorts of things. So it does help. It keeps them out of the system, and it helps people hopefully get their lives back on track a little bit. So I would support, first and foremost, more drug courts, the drug court system and the system we have in Kalamazoo being expanded throughout the state. And I look forward to, when I serve in the legislature, to making sure that that happens, and so that all these other counties can take advantage of such a great system and hopefully a cost-saving mechanism. Now, to answer your question more specifically, though, what I think, Gordon, is that I'm very concerned about what I've seen in Colorado right now, which is there's a case playing out right now in Colorado where an employee was fired for failing a random drug test screening and then sued his employer because his marijuana was legal under the state law, claimed he was not under the influence while at work, and of course the employer claimed that it's still illegal under the federal law. And so as we watch those issues play out, not only in Colorado, but I use that as a specific example, but I believe that this is going to happen more and more in Colorado and in Washington. And so I think the problem here is that if it hinders employers and their ability to hire good employees, and they're always going to be in protracted legal battles, and they're always going to be in lawsuits and involved in all sorts of other things, I think at the end of the day, I can't support decriminalizing it because I think it's bad for business.
Let me just stop you there for a moment, because some people would say there is quite a difference between legalizing and decriminalizing. And State House Speaker Bolger has spoken in favor of perhaps decriminalizing marijuana, where we say, it's going to be punishable by a ticket and a fine as opposed to spending some time in jail. But it would still be illegal.
Yeah. And I still think that that doesn't solve the problem that the employer's faced with at any point in time. They're still going to get into situations where the employee is going to show up at work, whether it's decriminalized or whether it's legalized, and potentially, even if they're not high on the job, start to fail random drug screenings. We're going to fire more employees. They're going to come back and they're going to say the same thing that's happening in Colorado, which is, hey, you can't fire me. And then what's going to happen? If it's bad for our businesses and it's bad for employers, I can't see myself supporting it.
Alex?
Brant, would you have supported the recent minimum wage hike?
The legislature was caught in a very difficult spot with a ballot proposal looming and a decision to move forward the way they did. I think I understand why the legislature did it, and it's always easy to Monday morning quarterback these things. But I will tell you that I wouldn't have supported it. I've talked to our small restaurateurs in particular about this issue, and they all know what's coming. Even though they can see down the road and they say, okay, I see where we're going with the increase. I know what's going to happen. I can budget for it. At the end of the day, it's still going to detrimentally impact our businesses. Because of where the business community is on this issue, I wouldn't have supported it, but I understand why the legislature did what they did. And so it was a tough vote for them to make. It was a tough vote, but did they make the right decision? Well, given the information that they had, which is probably different than the information that I had, well, I can understand why they made that decision. The example I always love to give is Zingerman's. I don't know if you've ever been to Zingerman's, but Zingerman's, of course, they pay their employees all a large, and I say large, $2 or $3 above the minimum wage. Subway pays their employees minimum wage. I can go to Subway and get a $5 footlong. I cannot go to Zingerman's and get a $5 sandwich. Now, of course, we can argue why that is in farm fresh, in natural products and all that. But at the end of the day, when this happens and when minimum wage starts to increase, prices will increase for the consumer at every single level.
Do you think the state should have any minimum wage at all?
I think minimum wage is important. I respect some of my colleagues that have come before me and have made certain comments about how the government should stay out of the minimum wage business. But I do believe, and I can respect that as well. But I understand the importance of having a minimum wage in place, and I respect that. But we also need to be very cognizant of how any increases in that can impact our business community.
Is it better to link it to inflation and say it's going up X amount every year or every 2 years, et cetera?
By linking it to inflation, it's a little bit better for budgetary purposes on a business side of things. So if the decision to link it to inflation is the lesser of all the evils, I wouldn't have supported the increase anyway. But that being said, with that in place, at least our employers can budget for it now. They know where it's going to go. They see the inflation numbers, and they know what they're going to have to pay for minimum wage increases.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with Brant Iden. He's a Republican candidate for State House in the 61st District, which includes the city of Portage. He's also a Kalamazoo County Commissioner. Kalamazoo Gazette reporter Alex Mitchell is here as well. Alex.
Brant, as a fairly young politician seeking your first run at state office, are term limits something that you are in favor of?
Fairly young. I appreciate it. I don't just get young. I get fairly young. Huh?
Well, I didn't want to undersell you there. You're still a young man.
I appreciate that. Starting to lose my hair up here. Come on now, Alex. No, you're right, Alex. Next week is my 31st birthday, and I was the youngest Republican ever elected to the County Board of Commissioners. Not the youngest, of course. That title is currently held by my Democratic friend, John Taylor. And but that being said, term limits, I'm in favor of a part-time legislature. And I've supported that when I was on the board of the Chamber of Commerce. I helped lead the petition drive for that. And I believe that the way, as we look at how government functions, it can be done with a part-time legislature. There can be lots of cost savings passed on to the citizens through a structure like that. We also need to be cognizant, however, that we cannot lose constituent relations and constituent services by moving and shifting to a part-time legislature. So we have to make sure that there are still enough dollars available to be able to service our constituents and the needs that they need. Now, that being said, term limit repeal is, it's a funny one, because that's an issue that when I look at it, I say, okay, you know, having been through the process a little bit with the county commission, I know that those commissioners that have been on the board longer have some institutional knowledge that they can bring to the table that helps our board function at the county level. And because they can look back and they can say, wait a minute, we've made that mistake before. And I know that if you repeal term limits and you have legislators there that are there for a longer period of time, they're going to have some institutional knowledge to bring to the table. And when they go into budget negotiations and other very important things, they're going to say, well, wait a minute, we've done that before. Whereas when they're out of there in 6 years, that there's a lot of information that you lose. But we have to be cognizant of the fact that time and time again, the citizens have said, you know, absolutely not. We don't support it. We don't want anybody going to Lansing forever. And so there's good turnover, and new ideas can come from turnover. And new young ideas, in my particular case, can come from turnover. And so we'll see how that goes.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but the chamber's proposal for a part-time legislature also called for eliminating term limits as part of that.
It did.
Is that the best case scenario? I mean, if you were starting from scratch and Brant Iden got to draw up how we do this, would it be a part-time legislature but no term limits?
I would support that again.
The governor has come out in favor of the legislature at least exploring the possibility of expanding the Elliot Larson Civil Rights Act, non-discrimination protection, to include sexual orientation and gender identity. If you were in the legislature, would you support that?
Well, Gordon, that's a great question, and one that hits home, I believe, with a lot of people. I think that I want to give a little context to your question. First, my background, I'm a you know, this question often intersects with faith and society a little bit, in my opinion. And I am Catholic, baptized, confirmed, and a practicing Catholic. And I believe that marriage should be between one man and one woman. And my faith and my background and my upbringing tell me that. And I believe that. However, as I told you at the beginning of the interview, I went to Kalamazoo College, and Kalamazoo College is a very large gay, bisexual, transgender organization and community there, as well as I live for a little while in the largest metropolitan city in Europe, London, and I have a lot of friends. I shouldn't emphasize a lot. I have a number of friends that obviously are homosexual. I have friends from college. I have friends that I met in passing, and so I'm not in a position to ever criticize them for their lifestyle or the lifestyle they choose to live. They're still my friends. But I also understand that when families are faced with the issue, and when they face their issue in churches, and they say, well, you know, I don't feel comfortable with this. And I totally understand that as well. And so I think that it's important to kind of put that context on the question a little bit. But however, and that being said, to answer your question more specifically, Gordon, I think that this problem, the problem that the legislature is currently facing with questioning whether or not to include another section of the Elliot Larson Act, has a potential impact for employers that could be detrimental to the way that they operate business. And by that, it could have some unintended consequences to there could be lawsuits that arise. There could be some other issues. My obviously, I'm a property manager and a landlord, and nowhere on my application, and I've never seen an application that asks your sexual orientation. It just doesn't. I don't think that the government should have to regulate this. Employers can put the can put it in their handbooks and say, you know, we don't discriminate. We, you know, this is our operating procedure, and in their handbook. I don't know that the government has to add an added level of regulation to that, and by putting another protected class in the Elliot Larson Act.
Does the state need a non-discrimination law at all?
When it comes to other protected classes,
right,
as well?
Because Elliot Larson covers a lot.
Elliot Larson does cover a lot. And I think that right now Elliot Larson covers covers all the protected classes that it should at the moment.
Okay, but I mean, I believe height is in there. And yet not sexual orientation at a time when we're kind of dealing with this. I mean, does that sit
I'm
well
not
with
sure.
You?
Is height in Elliot Larson? I'm not sure that height.
I believe, if not height, weight.
I guess I have not seen that. I was, I guess in the, my understanding of the Elliot Larson is just race. And so I'm not certain that height and weight are in there. So I guess I would.
We'll have to check.
Well, I'll have to check on that point.
Alex?
I think you made clear your position on where you stand on marriage. Would you be in favor of the state expanding civil unions to allow for the same benefits for same-sex couples, if that would be a possibility?
I think, yeah. I mean, I think that that's a different question. I mean, civil unions allow for benefits and that sort of thing, and I think that there, you know, a lot of states have moved towards that, and that's something that I think Michigan could certainly move to as well.
Your opponent in this race, when he was interviewed on this program, said that he just believes government should get out of marriage entirely. What's your thought on that?
He makes a very good point. And that that certainly, it's, I believe as well as my opponent, that government isn't the place to regulate that sort of thing. I think that, you know, your religious background, your religious faith, kind of direct your opinions and your thoughts on the issue, and it's not necessarily the place for government to tell you how to operate.
As someone who wants to go from local government to state government, what are your thoughts on some of the various consolidation efforts which have gone on in the state, including east of here, Albion and Marshall merging a high school? West of here, Saugatuck and Douglas turned down the opportunity to merge their two cities, the voters there. Do you think the state should be looking for ways to offer carrots, perhaps, to consolidate? Or should they just stand back and let local governments figure this out for themselves?
No, I think that the state has done – they've been working hard, both the legislature and the governor, to try to get more communities and other areas of government to consolidate. And I think that that's very important. There are a lot of cost-saving measures that can come from consolidation. You have to make sure that it works for the local community and that everybody's on board with it. The state can't just take this top-down approach and say, okay, you know, snap their fingers and say consolidate. It doesn't work that easy. Trust me. You have to put some thought and process into it, and the communities have to be willing, and their boards and their local leaders have to be able to willingly engage in those conversations. And as long as that can happen, I continue to support that, and I think that consolidation is needed in various levels of government.
We're just about at the end of our time here. We have two Republican county commissioners. You guys came on to the county commission at the same time. And I think just based on our conversation here, a lot of people may hear some very similar things that you're saying about your philosophy of government, your ideology, those sort of things. So I guess I'm wondering, for that person who is heading to the polls in August and they're wondering, how do they pick between these two? Can you just give us a couple thoughts on what are the things that you think might separate you from Phil Stinchcomb?
Sure, absolutely. Well, you're absolutely right. Commissioner Stinchcomb and I came on the board together, and we're going to be leaving together one way or another. We always joke about that. There is, in my opinion, there's a big difference between my opponent and myself. And as I think as you both have seen, I've recently been endorsed by the Michigan Chamber, the Grand Rapids Chamber, the Detroit Chamber of Commerce, and the Michigan Realtors Association. And all these organizations have looked at both my opponent and I, and they've said, you know, Brandt has the business background and the business leadership to be able to articulately advocate for the business community and the business community's needs. I mean, you know, my opponent is looking at a sales tax increase, I believe, in some other avenues, and so I think that's different. And one of the things that I'm looking at, and so, or something that I'd be willing to consider. And so I think it's going to come down to my background in the business community and my background, in leadership and the leadership that I provide on the county board.
Brant Iden, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Brant Iden is running for the Republican nomination in the 61st State House District, which includes the city of Portage. He's currently a Kalamazoo County Commissioner. And thanks again to Kalamazoo Gazette reporter Alex Mitchell.
Thanks for having me, Gordon.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.